And we're back on Fictional Frontiers. I'm your host, Sohei Bawan. Each week here on Fictional Frontiers, we cover the best, quote-unquote, in pop culture entertainment, genre entertainment across the board, whether it's film, television, comic books, video games. We review the content, we discuss the content, we explore the content. And I've been talking about this for quite a while, that we're going to have James Berardinelli, the founder of RealViews.net, the best online film critic in America, back on. And that is going to happen. We're doing our level best to get everything scheduling wise done and dusted where it needs to be. And what I hope is that we're going to be talking about Furiosa. That's what James and I are going to return talking about. That's the plan. I'm planning on going to a screening tomorrow. And then I hope to have a vibrant return of James this week. And we'll discuss that, and we'll keep covering the genre content as we move ahead and talk about what's going on, not just this summer, but in the genre circles in general. But you've got me this week alone anyway. As you can see, sometimes it's difficult to go solo, but it's even more difficult to squeeze as much creative juice out of a franchise as possible when you're looking at, more than anything else, bottom line issues, return on investment, and you're not wanting to take risks, and you're also not thinking outside the box. What am I talking about? What am I alluding to here? I'm talking about Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, okay? Now, I had the chance to watch the film a couple times over the last 2 weeks, and I just saw that it crossed over $230 million worldwide. The budget was $160 million, okay? So I'm going to talk about a couple things with respect to this film, because I think it's very important to look at this project as we look at some of the other ones on the horizon we've talked about. I'll give you my take on the film, and then I'll talk about the strengths and the weaknesses and what I mean by squeezing whatever potential is out of something to try to get a solid ROI versus really focusing on the storytelling side of things, okay? I guess you can tell from my tone that I wasn't that enamored with the film. From a technical perspective, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is a very impressive film. There's no doubt about that. The CG obviously has gotten stronger and stronger when it comes to the motion capture, when it comes to the performance capture of these actors. Obviously, Andy Serkis kind of set the stage for all this, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, what's happening with the Lord of the Rings franchise and how he's coming back for this hunt for Gollum film that he's developing with Peter Jackson and his whole crew at the helm there. Andy Serkis will be directing that, and we'll talk about that because I'm not really that excited about that, to be honest with you, and I'll talk about why. But again, it kind of ties into this notion of squeezing as much as possible out of a franchise. But even when you have all the technology at your disposal, and as we move ahead over the next couple of years with the embrace of AI, I wouldn't say the emergence, I would say the embrace of AI, because it's already there. It's just a matter of how it's utilized, who's using it, what are the legalities associated with it, where do the artists who have been cutting their teeth on these franchises go after AI comes along and maybe takes some of their gigs, some of their efforts? Or are artists going to have to just, there's a whole discussion we're going to have, and I'm actually going to invite someone on to talk about AI who is an expert in AI. He's been studying for years the embrace and use of the technology, and right now he's working at a particular company using AI on cancer research, using AI to help find ways to eliminate cancer, okay? And he's a Harvard grad too, right? So he's got the bona fides there. But he'll talk about the AI explosion and where we're going and how it will impact things from a creative perspective, because in his industry, it's obviously, you know, bearing a lot of really positive fruit. But a lot of people are still nervous, even in his industry. Is that going to be the case with people who are in the entertainment industry as well? We'll talk about that. But going back to Apes, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, it's very clear that the technology is available now, and that's probably one of the reasons why there was a push to do another chapter in the saga because, you know, within reason, you don't necessarily need to have the biggest actors per se to play roles in this franchise. If you look at the previous three films in the new trilogy of Planet of the Apes films, which were incredibly well done, probably the most underrated trilogy in the history of films, because it could be argued they were some of the best films in the fantasy science fiction genre ever made. And as far as a trilogy, it's right up there with the best of the best. So you can't blame the people behind the Apes franchise with thinking that, okay, we can continue this story because we haven't quite reached the point where this series actually started, I guess, with Charlton Heston arriving on the Planet of the Apes and what happened after that. I won't say anything because there may be some people who actually haven't seen the original film. But nonetheless, we see where this is going in many respects. It's almost akin to the prequel trilogy in Star Wars, right? Because you know that Darth Vader is Luke's father. And then the prequel trilogy was all about how you got to the point where Darth Vader emerged. When Anakin Skywalker became Darth Vader, how do we get to that point? So the surprise wasn't there with the prequel trilogy. Those surprises were more along the lines of, how did we get there? What were the elements that led to the fall of Anakin Skywalker versus, wow, Anakin Skywalker is Darth Vader? This whole time we thought that Luke's father was a friend of Obi-Wan Kenobi's, which he was, but we never knew that the friend of Obi-Wan Kenobi was actually the greatest villain in the Star Wars saga. So that's what the prequel trilogy did. And some people would argue that that's less interesting because it's not really exciting to know how he got to a point if you know where the end point is. You know, the journey isn't as exciting as the end point. And some people like to know, or like to watch, I should say, projects that kind of push you into the future because you don't know what the end result is going to be. You don't know where they're going. It's almost like professional sports. One of the reasons why professional sports continues to enthrall and do so well across the board in this age of reality television, streaming content, feature films, all this stuff that, you know, are basically reboots or reimaginations or imaginings, I should say, of franchises, you know, different iterations of, I guess you could say, you know, comic-centric or genre-centric content as a whole, you know, the staples of those industries. The reason people love professional sports is because you don't know what the end result is going to be. At least you hope not. I mean, there are people who believe that professional sports has a lot of fixing in it, and so they may know. It's kind of like wrestling, some would argue. And that's a discussion for another day. When you look at some of the officiating in the NBA playoffs, you wonder whether or not the league is trying to steer narratives in a particular direction, particularly if you're a Sixers fan, right? That's a whole other discussion, again, for another day. I definitely do feel the Knicks were favored over the Sixers for a lot of different reasons, and one of those reasons probably has to do with ratings. That's just my opinion. I don't have tangible evidence of that. But the point of the matter is that even in a series like the Knicks-Sixers series, you don't know the end result because the performers are developing the story as they go along. The story is emerging at the same time as the viewers are absorbing it, as at the same time that they are experiencing it. It's all on the same linear path, right? That's what they say, you know, that's why they say that you don't know what the end result is going to be. What they say is that that's why they throw the balls on the court. They roll the balls onto the court in tennis, for example. You don't know until you actually play the game itself. That's why the NCAA tournament has been so special for so many years, because people have said, look, we don't know what is going to happen. You can have an upset of a number one by a number 16. So again, I've gone off on a huge tangent here with respect to prequels and sequels and all this stuff. But the point of the matter is this. Most people, and I'm not saying all of them, because there are people who are fans of history or recreations of history or revisiting history, they prefer stories about the future and less about the past. At least when it comes to franchises like Star Wars, or in the case of the Planet of the Apes films, I would argue, in the case of the Apes franchise. We know where this is going. And even though I didn't, you know, give you the details, if you haven't seen the original 1960s Planet of the Apes with Charlton Heston and Roddy McDowall, if you don't know what the last scene of that film involves, one of the, you know, most powerful endings in the history of film, I will just say this. What we've seen so far with this new trilogy takes away a lot of the surprise. I'll just put it that way. Okay. Nonetheless, if you are going to go that route and you're going to give people details about how we got to a particular point that everyone knows about or a seminal point in history, and even when you look at historical epics, there are these tentpole moments, and the most successful films and stories across the board, whether it's in publishing, whether it's in television, what have you, are those films which have or are focused on a particular moment or series of moments that are so important, so fascinating, so enthralling, so important that people definitely want to know how they got to that point. How did things get to the point that this event happened? Okay. And I think that's what the producers of the Planet of the Apes franchise have been banking on. That's why they did the first three films in the new Andy Serkis-led trilogy with Caesar. And like I said before, the writing was fantastic. The directing was on point. You know, you had incredible cinematography. And you had characters you cared about, not just on the ape side, but also on the human side to some degree. Okay, or at least kept your attention. Woody Harrelson, for example, a very dynamic actor who basically can carry a scene. You need compelling human characters sometimes to offset the CG-related characters or oriented characters. I mean, obviously, Avatar is an exception to the rule. Although one would argue that the primary reason that Avatar has done well is not because of the characters. The characters are pretty much archetypes. And they're probably no different than, you know, characters you would read about in a story or, you know, novel for fifth or sixth graders. They're not great characters. They're not compelling, deep characters with motivations and decisions that are more nuanced than, say, the cookie cutter black and white characters we're accustomed to seeing in children's literature or shows or films for younger audiences. The reason that film did so well, or that those two films did so well, was not because of the characters, even though it was all CG. It was because of the visual elements of those films. The 3D in the Avatar films is probably the best in the history of cinema, along with maybe Tron Legacy. So that's what's really been pulling people in with that franchise. So you don't have that here, okay, with the Apes franchise. Or at least this latest film, The Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Okay. For me, I thought it was a solid film, but it was not a great film. It was a pretty good film. That's kind of the way I would describe the film. That's the way I would classify it as maybe a 2.5, 3-star film if you want to go by star ratings. Which means it's an enjoyable time out at the theaters. But to me, it's almost like treading water. That's the way I looked at this film, especially when I read that there's the possibility of 9 films in this saga. Okay. Now, I was a fan, I'm still a fan of the original Charlton Heston series of films, because there was a whole series of films that came after, because they were very provocative in their own ways. Okay. And I don't know, maybe it's just a personal thing with me, but the one thing that I came to appreciate with respect to the Apes characters was that, and maybe we'll see this in this franchise as well, when they do speak in English or whatever language they're speaking in, it actually sounds like a human being versus an ape trying to mimic a human being. And maybe there won't be those pauses later on. Maybe they're going to be more skilled at speaking or more developed along those lines, so you don't see that. Because I think one of the reasons why the original Charlton Heston films did so well is because when you had characters like Roddy McDowall and you had characters like Dr. Zaius, Zira, you had these characters who were basically human beings who looked like apes is what they were. And so there's a connection that we have with those characters on some level. And I think that there's still somewhat of a disconnect here to a certain degree. Not across the board. Obviously, Caesar in the last three films, we connected with him. But it took like three films to get to that point. And also, Andy Serkis is such an amazing performer that he has the ability to connect audiences with his characters without saying much, whether it's Kong, whether it's Smeagol. I won't mention Snoke. Snoke was not a character we connected with. We didn't connect with anything in the sequel trilogy, the worst trilogy of films that we've seen maybe ever across the board. Although the Matrix films, I guess the Matrix had two films afterwards. Was it two or three? I'm trying to remember. Was there another one? Well, the original trilogy, nothing to write home about. But the Star Wars trequels. I was thinking about three and sequels. The Star Wars trilogy and their sequels were not strong. And Andy Serkis played a character named Snoke who was cut in half in the second film. Why, I don't know. It's one of the things you'll have to ask Rian Johnson. Why was the main villain in that franchise completely taken off the board, which ushered in the return of the Emperor, because everyone was so upset about where the series was going? Okay, what's going on with this? And aside from the fact that they completely destroyed the character of Luke Skywalker, again, I digress. But going back to the apes films right now, what we've seen with this latest film is an expansion or an additional chapter in this saga, which is leading us up to the point, we think, where a Charlton Heston-like character will be arriving on the planet of the apes. I think what will probably happen is that we will see that in the next film or two. And if they are planning another three films after that, we will probably see the apes or the planet of the apes in the future, just as we saw in the Planet of the Apes saga, the original Planet of the Apes saga with Charlton Heston at the very beginning. Because, again, I don't want to spoil it. It's a really fascinating turn of events. But if you're a fan of time travel, if you're a fan of the future not being set in any way, form, or fashion as far as these stories are concerned, that saga did a really, really nice job in setting the board, resetting the board, setting the board, resetting the board. And ending on what I thought was a rather hopeful note in some way, form, or fashion. And I think that's where they need to go, okay? But this film, the reason I said I wasn't that excited about it is because even though from a cinematic production design perspective, world-building perspective, it didn't really seem to add much. And as a matter of fact, it seemed like we took a step back from where the last film ended. It's not really a spoiler, but we start with the funeral of Caesar at the very beginning. And then there's a time jump. And I know it logically makes sense to a degree that you have this planet that has been overrun by this virus as far as the human population is concerned. Most of the humans have been devolved, if you will, to almost animal-like caricatures of what they once were. There are certain people who have either been immune to this virus or are in bunkers and underneath the world, underneath the earth, just like you see in Fallout, trying to bring humanity back. But for the most part, humanity is wiped out. And so when you have that, and you have apes who are now just emerging as the dominant species, they don't have the technological warehouse or the architecture built up in their societies that looks something like what we saw in the Planet of the Apes films that Charlton Heston starred in. Because you could see they had their own architecture, they had their own style, they had their own clothing. We're still at this stage where they are, I guess you would say primitive man, so to speak, almost like primitive man. You know, more of a tribal state versus a state that has culture, art, and all that. Although it is emerging, and I think that's what they're trying to show, that this is eventually where it gets to. But from a narrative perspective, that isn't really what you want to see. But if it is something you decide to go with, you have to develop a story that's more compelling than what we saw here. Because it seems to me that the storytellers took too many cues from Avatar: The Way of Water. Because Avatar had certain very similar elements with their tribal society, especially when it came to the younger characters in that film. You know, rites of passage, connection with certain animals in nature or beasts in nature that they're trying to tame. And that taming is what actually elevates someone in that society. So we see that here. And maybe it would have worked to a degree, but they spent a very long time focusing on that, probably the first 20 minutes of the film, until they really got to the heart of the conflict here, which is the introduction of a young human character who we think can't speak, whose name is Nova. But we find out later on that's definitely not the case. There's much more than meets the eye. And then we are introduced to another ape kingdom led by another ruler who has basically taken the teachings of Caesar, because Caesar set up a moral code in the previous trilogy about what apes could and could not do, which was predicated on this notion of respect not only for apes, but between human beings and apes as well. And we're introduced to a character who has kind of, you know, bastardized that to a degree. And that's pretty much it, okay? We get the seeds of things, so I guess you could argue what we've seen with this film is that if it's moving ahead, it's moving ahead maybe half a step versus a full step. And when you don't have a compelling lead human character in the sense of a, you know, scene-chewing character like a Woody Harrelson, so to speak, or maybe some of the more empathetic human characters in the last film, you have a younger actress who's doing a pretty good job here trying to have you invested in the role of Nova. But you need to feel a sense of either aligning yourself with one side or the other, or at least being interested in one side or the other. Here, I wasn't really that interested in the human side of things. I don't want to say I'm not a supporter of humanity, but you really kind of support the apes here, but then you really don't get the chance to be as invested in the ape characters as you would, or as you were with Caesar and some of the other characters leading up to this. So in a nutshell, what I felt was, this was a film that's trying to milk the franchise because they're looking more at trying to make 9 films versus trying to advance the storyline in a way that makes sense. And then, okay, if it can continue, fine, let's continue it. And again, we've talked about this, James and I have talked about this, and it's been something that Marvel really messed up in their their previous efforts in the superhero genre. And that is, rather than focusing on telling the best stories, rather than looking at the assets they have, whether it's technological, like in the case here with the apes films, or you know, an invested fan base who really loved the previous films and saying, okay, we're going to produce a compelling story that's going to compel them to watch this film, regardless of whether or not they were interested or not, they decided to tread water instead and say, listen, we got plenty of time. Let's try to squeeze 3 films out of here instead of 1 film. Okay, leading up to Charlton Heston's chapter, or the chapter that starred Charlton Heston. And that's a colossal mistake, because I saw the cinema score, it was a B. And typically a B score, cinema score wise, is not good. It's not good. Now, you look at the score here, the box office total, by the end of its run, it's probably going to break even, maybe a little bit ahead. Okay, it's probably going to end up being around the $400 million range, I think. That's what I'm thinking, maybe $450. So with the marketing and all these other elements added to the mix, it's going to be something that did pretty well, not great. But you have people who love this franchise, who love the previous trilogy. I was a fan of the original Apes films, except for the Tim Burton film, which was a disaster. And I thought these latest 3 films were fantastic. I was very excited about this. Even the trailer got me excited. But then I was watching this film, and I have to confess, I nearly fell asleep at one point watching this film the first time, because they spent so much time milking this initiation phase of the apes characters and not getting to the meat of the story because they wanted to, I don't know, maybe extend the length of the story itself to, you know, 2.5 hours, what have you. It easily could have been an under 2 hour film, and maybe the pace would have, you know, been much more interesting and would have kept the attention much more strongly. But I felt like this film was a microcosm of the motivations behind the saga, which is squeezing as much out of this and trying to tread water. And rather than actually taking the natural organic step forward in producing a film that's going to advance the story in a compelling way, let's take a half step because we can make more money. That gives us a chance to make two films, just like what happened with the Hobbit trilogy. That's another example. There was no reason for that series to be three films. It could have easily been two films, but they wanted a third film. And I was at San Diego Comic Con when the announcement was made that it was no longer going to be a Hobbit duology. It was going to be a Hobbit trilogy. And what happens when you make a series of films a trilogy, when you pad the story loses a lot as a whole. It becomes filler material. As a matter of fact, if you look at the anime industry, the anime series, they have so many episodes. But if you go online, the fans have done the other fans who have just started watching the shows a great service. What have they done? They have a list of all the episodes, and they say, okay, must watch episode. If you look at the checklist, filler episode. And sometimes you'll find, I'm not making this up, 5 or 6 episodes in a row that are all filler. What does that mean? It has nothing to do with the overall narrative of the story, so you don't have to watch it. And that's the fundamental problem with this franchise that I'm seeing right now. And we'll talk about some of these other projects on the horizon because Marvel did the same thing. Everyone wanted to see the X-Men. Everyone wanted to see the Fantastic Four. They were not interested in seeing feature films or television series based on some of the minor characters. There's a reason why they're supporting characters. They're compelling as supporting characters. And what happened was that they diluted their brand by too much padding, too much treading water, and trying to squeeze as much out of it as possible to extend the overall length of the ROI positivity of this franchise moving ahead. And what happens when you do that is you lose people, and people may just give up on the franchise as a whole. And I hope that's not the case with the Apes, you know, series of films. And I hope that's not the case with a lot of these sagas. But it's something to think about going ahead. For me, middle of the road, and we'll talk to James about it, not a great film, maybe a good film, but a film that was a half step instead of a whole step is what, which was what it should have been. It should have been a whole step in the direction leading to the Charlton Heston version of Planet of the Apes that we all know. I don't know if we love it, but we all know it. And we all know the famous line at the end of that film. You're listening to Fictional Frontiers. We'll catch you next week. Be safe, my friends.